Hi there, I'm Deb Crow, and I want to welcome you to Season 4 of Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast where we connect, learn, and laugh together with authentic and courageous leaders from all over the globe. You will learn from leaders you haven't even met yet. You will gain new tools to add to your leadership toolkit, because leadership belongs to all of us. It is not measured by stature or title. So please pull up a chair and listen in. This is the Imperfect Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. Welcome back to Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. And I'm delighted today. We've got Brian Clayton here from Nashville, and I was just gushing over how much I love Nashville, Tennessee. 9-hour drive from my house in Ontario. So Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
So we switched things up in season 4 because my team's always pushing me to that, you know, level of discomfort to grow every season. So I don't want to read your bio. I would love for you to give us an overview of who you are and what you do so that our listeners in 65 countries can get a nice snapshot of who Brian is.
Well, awesome. So my name is Brian Clayton. I am co-founder of a company called GreenPal. And GreenPal is a mobile app that works like Instacart or DoorDash or Uber, but for lawn care services. So if you own or rent a house, you need to get somebody to mow the yard, rather than calling around on Craigslist or Facebook or something, you just download GreenPal. You pop your address in and somebody comes out and mows the yard for you. And GreenPal is a 10-year overnight success. My two co-founders and I have built the business over the course of a decade to nationwide United States. So any city that in the United States, you can order a lawn mowing service on GreenPal. Right around 300,000 people using it every week for lawn mowing. And our goal is to get to a million people using it every week.
That's amazing. What a great entrepreneurial story. So my first leadership question is going to be, share with us your background. Was it entrepreneurial? Did you come from the corporate world? Were you in IT? Where did this vision spark from and how did you bring it to fruition?
Yeah, so my first business was a lawn mowing business. I started mowing grass in high school as a way to make extra money. And little by little, stuck with that lawn mowing business over the course of 15 years.
Wow.
Grew it year over year, just adding a couple of employees, adding a few more customers, eventually getting it to 150 people and 8 figures a year in revenue. And so in 2013, it was acquired by a big national company in the landscaping industry. You wouldn't think that there's like big national companies in this industry, but there's a handful of them, and one of them bought the business. But in the first business, I learned everything through the school of hard knocks. Nobody teaches us how to run a small business. Nobody teaches us how to be a leader. Nobody teaches us how to be a good manager. So you kind of have to learn these things on the fly, and the marketplace and customers and employees kind of teach you how to be a good leader, how to be a good manager. And if you don't learn, then you don't succeed. You don't build a vibrant business. And so I had to learn it the hard way through doing it wrong for many years, and then getting coaches and reading books and learning my style of management leadership.
It's the typical entrepreneurial journey, but it leads nice into my third question, but I'm going to ask you my second question first. So my second question has permanent residency on the show. I've asked over 260 leaders this question. What imperfections does Brian bring to his heart-centered leadership?
Yeah, many. So some imperfections is I want everything perfect, and I expect everything to be perfect, and I expect everybody to care about the business as much as I do, almost to a fault. And almost to where I'll get frustrated and disappointed when my people don't. And then I want to blame them. I want to blame them because they don't care about the objectives of the business or the vision of the business as much as I do. And that's not their fault. That's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
I am the leader. I am the one that is supposed to lead everybody towards a common goal. I'm the leader. I'm the person supposed to set the standard of what the business is all about. What are we going to accept as quality, and how do we grade and measure that? And so when you're the founder, the leader of an organization, of a business, everything begins and ends with you. Everything is your fault. And so that's probably a fault of mine, that I'm always trying to make the business run better, faster, smoother, more efficiently, almost to a fault to where I expect people to care about it as much as I do. And I'm always having to kind of course correct around that. So it never ends. You always struggle with that.
And you landed on the Imperfect Podcast, so you're in the right place.
Awesome.
Now, I want to piggyback on what you answered for my first leadership question. And, you know, let's go back to that young student in high school that started the lawn mowing. A lot of us have our first job kind of in that pre-adolescent teen kind of age range. What would you say to that younger version of Brian and any young person who's got a paper route or doing something online or cutting lawns? What advice would you instill in them now, knowing what you know? What would you say to that young person or even that young version of Brian?
Yeah, the hardest part would be you know, figuring out what you would say out of 100 different things. But one that comes to mind would be that we're always told to work hard on the business and you will be successful. That's kind of the American dream. If you work really hard, you'll be successful. And that's true. Hard work is required, but it's not the only thing that's going to make you successful. And all you got to do is look at a restaurant. You know, the people that are working the hardest in the restaurant, whether it be the busboy or the servers or the cooks, they participate in the smallest amount of economics of the business. So it's not all about working hard. It's about working hard and doing the difficult work. So there's a difference between hard work and difficult work. And so to use the restaurant example again, the founder of the restaurant, the restaurateur, found the location, found the lease, negotiated the lease, did a market survey, tried to figure out what the demographics of the neighborhood were and what food would fit well in that neighborhood, and then ran through all the economics of the business with a spreadsheet, tried to figure out what they could charge, and then every day is looking at what the business is bringing in, if they're making money or not. That's difficult. That's a lot more difficult than cooking the food. Mm-hmm. And so knowing the difference between hard work and difficult work and setting aside time to do both and knowing kind of when you're in one zone versus the other is something that I would have told myself 25 years ago. Nobody told me that. So I thought if I worked really hard just cutting grass, that I would eventually build a big business. And it took me like 5 years to figure out that, no, you have to work really hard cutting grass, but you also have to figure out, are you making money per labor hour? What is your marketing strategy? What is the value proposition of the business? And what are you doing differently than your competitors? These are difficult tasks, a lot harder than actually weed eating or pulling weeds or mowing yards. So trying to learn that sooner would be the first thing I would do.
You know, lots of entrepreneurs, including myself, we can easily get caught on working in the business instead of on the business, which is basically what you just framed so beautifully. Okay, my last leadership question is, if you had an opportunity to speak to some young adults, whether it be thinking about entrepreneurship, what would be the first foundational skill within leadership that you would share with them and why?
Yeah, it's a good question because nobody teaches us how to be a leader. We're not taught how to be a leader in high school, certainly. And even if you go to business school, you're not taught how to be a leader. So that would be the first thing I would try to instill into myself 25 years ago, and anybody who's just getting started, is you're going to have to learn how to be a decent leader to do anything in business, because you can't do it all alone. You're going to have to build a team around you. And I think one of the easiest ways to do that is to just live it, to breathe it, to own it. What is your level of enthusiasm of the business? What is your commitment to what the business is trying to do? Because you'll get exactly that out of your people. One day when I was building my first company, I think we were in like 60 or 70 people, and I was driving to the office one day, and I had this knot in my stomach. I didn't want to go there. I didn't want to go to the office. And I thought, man, this sucks. Half the people that work for me hate me, and the other half, I don't like them. I would never hang out with these people if I was given the opportunity or the choice My customers are pissed off. My vendors, I haven't paid them, you know, like in 2 weeks. And so it's like everything was going wrong. And I felt bad about it. And I thought, you idiot, you built this. This is you. This is a reflection of you. And so I had to like go through like a year of self-reflection and working on myself to realize that the people that work for you are going to reflect your level of enthusiasm, your level of commitment, your level of passion for what the business is trying to do. And don't expect them to take it to the next level if you're not willing to do that. So it all begins and ends with you. I read a book about Sam Walton a couple of months ago. And one of the things he talks about in that book was to walk your own store. You know, Sam Walton was famous for that he would, even though he was over thousands of stores at one point in time, he would still walk the store and his people would see him there talking about, hey, we should change this or we should do that. You know, he lived it, he breathed it, he cared about it. And I think that's the first thing any founder could do when you're hiring your first employee all the way up to 100 is you really have to embody what the business is and be passionate about it.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Walmart wasn't an initial overnight success. It took time and passion. And I was in Los Cabos last year for a holiday, and my husband and I are boaters, and we saw the Walton family yacht, and it's quite lovely. Yeah. All the locals were happy to tell us that's the people that own Walmart. Look at their boat.
They probably have several, but I saw the heiresses, her yacht in Miami. So it could be the same one you're talking about. And it was insanely impressive.
It was beautiful.
And that all came from Sam Walton's obsession with what their mission was, what they were trying to do, how they were doing it better than their competitors. And it really, a lot of it came back to that he was willing to walk the store.
Yes.
Even at super huge scale, he still got on the ground and walked the store.
Yeah, that's humility. That's heart-centered.
That's right.
When I looked at that boat, I was like, good for them. They deserve it. That hard work we talked about. Okay, I'm going to switch to my Fab Four. Just four rapid-firing questions. Just tell us what's sitting on the top of that brilliant mind of yours. Question number one, name a word or phrase that shows up daily in your leadership language.
Consistency. You know, I think a lot of times brilliance and tremendous levels of success can just really be explained by consistency. I'm not, as a founder, as an entrepreneur, particularly talented at anything. I'm not gifted in any sort of way. I'm just relentlessly consistent about what it is we're trying to do and what the inputs are. And I don't really worry about the goals. I worry about the routines. And I worry about, okay, what are the habits? What are the routines of the business? Good. What are the daily check-ins? What are we expecting from the people that are working in the company with us? And how are we being consistent about measuring that and monitoring that and improving that? So that's probably like a common denominator, common thread for me, 22 years of building and selling one company and now building Green Pal to where it is just being relentlessly consistent about what we're doing.
When we're a slave to our good habits, it can only have a great outcome, right?
That's right.
I love that. Okay, number two, name a book that you've read at any juncture in your life. What was the name of the book and the author, if you can remember, and why was it impactful?
It's a book I wish I had read when I was much younger. It's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen Covey. I try to read that book once a year. It is just really a roadmap and a handbook on how to live an effective life. And you can apply it to anything, to relationships, to business, friendships, to if you're running an organization or a church or whatever it is, that book has some really clearly defined principles of how you should live your life and live an effective life. And it's one I wish I had discovered 20-something years ago. I discovered it about 10 years ago. And I find that I try to read the same four or five books over and over again, rather than just reading everything that comes out. I think that's a better strategy.
Yeah, it's a great book. Okay, my third question, I'll give you some context. I'm granting you a wish. You get to have dinner with any leader of your choice. Now, this leader may be living, they may have passed away. Who are you having dinner with, and what is the dinner conversation?
Let's keep it business related. It's probably an unpopular choice, given you could choose anybody. But I think it's important to try to learn from somebody who has done what it is you're trying to do. And I could have dinner with Elon Musk, but he might as well be on Mars compared to what it is I'm trying to do. And so I think a good person for me would be a guy named Travis Kalanick or a guy named Brian Chesky, either one of them. Travis Kalanick founded Uber, Brian Chesky founded Airbnb. And those two entrepreneurs built something from scratch where they were connecting buyers and sellers at a local level, and which is, that's kind of what we do for lawn care. We connect buyers and sellers at a very local level with GreenPal. And so they have done and solved and built teams to solve really complex problems, to build marketplaces at a local level. And they've solved a lot of the things that I am trying to solve now in a different industry. I would have dinner with either of those guys.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd even throw in the CEO of Netflix, because I think he's Reed Hastings is another guy that I had Chip Conley on the show, and he worked with the brainchilds of Airbnb. And he said to them, why would anybody want to rent somebody else's house? And he said, Deb, I have eaten humble pie. And he said, you know what they taught me? As I aged, I forgot to allow awe and wonder and curiosity to have a place in my leadership. And then I joked with them and I said, how many Airbnbs have you stayed at? He said, over 150.
Wow.
And he comes from a hotel chain. He owned over 28 hotels. And, you know, he's now in the space of making Modern Elder look sexy and fun and longer having midlife crisis. So what a great conversation. Okay, I'm going to have you finish the show, Brian. Thanks so much for your time. And I'm so excited for you, for what you're going to do and advance to do with your app, with GreenPal. And hey, maybe you should bring it to Canada. There's a little nudge for you.
These invisible lines between us are very real, but we're working on solving them. But we'll be in Canada soon.
Finish this sentence for me to close out the show. Heart-centered leadership is?
You have to give a shit about your people. You have to really care. I mean, you got to really care. You can't just, I worked with a leadership coach one time and he was like, you know, do you really care how your office manager's weekend was? Or are you just asking? Or do you really care where your operations manager is trying to go in life? What are the top three things that they're trying to solve in their life right now? And I couldn't answer that. Do you really care about your people? Like, do you care they're trying to put a down payment on a house, or do they try to put a kid through school? Are they trying to get a new car, or their car's breaking down? What are their problems? And where does the business fit with that? And where does the business help them get where they're trying to go? You really have to care. You can't fake it. And it has to come from the heart, because something inside of us can recognize if that's real or not. And if you're not willing to care, then don't try to build a team of people, because there's just no way to fake it.
Thanks so much for joining me today on Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the show today and have learned some new tools for your leadership toolkit from our amazing heart-centered guest. If you like the show, feel free to give us a rating and a review, and we always welcome your feedback anytime. If you're ready to master the art of heart, my new book, The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook, is now available on Amazon, or you can click the link below in our description.